as Australians, we have that weird kind of obsession with the, you know, the local pub and the Palmer and the pot. And my first meal out of lockdown was in a pub, and it was like the most exciting thing ever, which is crazy.
Today on Dirty Linen, we are chatting to one of Melbourne's most long-standing and celebrated hospitality entrepreneurs. Her name is Tracy Lester. She owns iconic venues like the Windsor Castle, the Carlton Club in the city, and the Gertrude Hotel in Fitzroy. Tracy, welcome to Dirty Linen.
Hi, Danny. Thanks for having me. It's great to chat to you today.
It's great to have you on the show. And I guess I really wanted to, I visited your venues over the decades and always enjoyed them for their welcome, their colour, their vibrancy. And, you know, most recently we were in touch because you've recently, I guess, reopened, redone the Gertrude Hotel. And it just seems to me like such a celebration of hospitality that I wanted to learn more about how you approach your different businesses. So I hope you're up for having a chat about all that.
Yeah, love to. I guess, you know, I started my career as an artist and kind of got annoyed with art and the art world and thought I could have a bar that would support my artwork and I wouldn't have to do commercial photography or filmmaking. And so I was looking in the early days of my career, you know, for places that I wanted to go to in Fitzroy. I was living in Fitzroy and I just couldn't find them. So frustrated by the, you know, being controlled by commercial clients in an artistic situation and not being able to find places that I wanted to go to, thought I'd open my own bar. And I started looking around Fitzroy and Collingwood. This is back in the early 90s. And originally I was trying to use that as my art outlet and thinking of, you know, I'd change the interiors once a month and things like that. And my parents owned Rhubarbs at the time, which was in Gertrude Street, and they were trying to sell it, yada yada yada, because they were getting divorced. And then it sort of all clicked that, you know, we should buy the property off them. And yeah, so then I opened Yelza, and I guess it is, at the time it was what I thought my friends and my peers and my colleagues in the neighbourhood wanted. And we were all sort of living in Fitzroy in the 90s on op shop couches and, you know, warehouses full of lots of people. And I thought, you know, we all needed a bit of glamour and glitz and to be transformed and transported out of our world into a kind of creative world of our own imagination. So I guess that's what I've always done with my venues. I've always done what I want and what I see missing in the market, and I've always found them, tried to make them places that, yeah, really take you on a journey and transform you to a different world and sort of do what hospitality is meant to do, like take you out of your, you know, the mundane, your everyday life, and give you, entertain you basically, and take you to a whole another realm where you can leave all your woes of the day or your week at the door and enjoy yourself in community and have fun. And I guess my venues, the interiors are quite quirky and bright and colourful, because I like to kind of be a bit mad and colourful and, you know, get people to be a bit imaginative and sort of wonder where they are in the world for a moment. Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's so lovely. Like, it's this great combination of really personal, like what do me and my friends want from a venue, but also I guess looking at what the market wants, and then also having this creative outlet for yourself. I mean, do you feel like you've succeeded over the years in satisfying your own artistic impulses through the creativity you've poured into the venues?
Yes, definitely. I mean, I sort of, you know, without sounding too egotistical, I kind of always do what I like to do. And then, you know, if I'm bored, I'll create a new project. So like with the Carlton Club, we, you know, I thought it used to be an old hotel So on the fourth floor, there was six old little single bedrooms, and we created like a thing called Ever Dreamed of Owning Your Own Bar and the Bar Dream, basically because I wanted a new project and wanted to help some people create some bars in the space. And so I always come up with these crazy, weird ideas like Christmas rooms, and I did a Santa's house party just to sort of get my own desires for sculpting and painting and making things out. But I guess with the venues, it's also, it's a creative outlet, but I'm trying to, you know, when I'm designing them, I have to be quite conscious that they have to be drunk proof, because some of the design elements that I'd like in there have to last the test of time. And I know when people get particularly drunk, they like to take them in toe off a wall or rip it out of something because it's their anniversary and them and their fiance met here at, you know, one of my venues. So they think that's license to rip something out of the wall or smash something. So, yeah, there's a little bit of that goes on in my design process as well.
I thought when you said drunk proof that you were meaning like not too many sharp corners, but actually you're just talking about fixing everything down properly.
Yeah, fixing everything down so that, you know, I've had paintings pull off the walls and, you know, particularly plastic plants that are, you know, concreted into things. They like to pull them out because they want to give their girlfriend a flower, and it's 3 a.m. and here's one in front of me. So, yeah, that it needs to be no sharp corners and, you know, it's going to trip and all that sort of thing. But, yeah, more so last the test of time, both aesthetically and, you know.
It's such a rich tapestry of humans that that weave their way through your businesses. And I suppose it's like that for all hospitality people. But, I mean, how do you sort of stay in love with the art of looking after people when they do behave quite badly at times?
That's an interesting question. My job, and I guess coming back to Gertrude Street and opening this pub, you know, so after so long I've been a bit like, oh, can I be bothered? And then I get there on the night and, you know, I do enjoy talking to people. I do enjoy entertaining people. I do enjoy, you know, giving people an experience of fun and exciting and places where they can meet people or dance. So I guess, you know, during the day before you open, you can be a bit like, oh, can I be bothered? And then you kind of get there and you're like, oh, yeah, this is actually why I'm doing it. This is the purpose, you know, to give other people joy, to give other people entertainment, to be hospitable. And, you know, I generally do love talking to people and meeting different people. So, yeah, it hasn't waned off in the, you know, in the last few years, which is good. Still excited to be around people, to be at the nightclub. It's 2 a.m. or 3 a.m.
I reckon the Gertrude Hotel, which you've taken on Gertrude Street, not that far from where Yelza opened so many years ago, I would say it is the least jaded room that I can think of. It is so vibrant. I think it would be impossible to be grumpy in such a space. I would love you just to describe it for people who have not had the extraordinary experience of plunging into that front bar.
It's very bright. It's very colourful. It's very quirky. It will lead to a whole different world where you're sort of like, where am I on Gertrude Street? Where am I? I think with all my places, I like to, that impresses me. So I sort of live in, my house is brightly coloured and wacky and kooky, and I sort of find that when I used to travel a lot and come back to Yelza or the Carlton, and I still get that sense of wow myself when I walk in, which is what I'm trying to do with the customers as well, and sort of give them a sense of joy and wonder that, you know, you don't get bored of it coming time and time again. And I feel like particularly in the last few years, we've all spent a lot of time in, you know, white walls in our houses. And so I feel like the Gertrude is a great kind of antithesis of that. It's bright, it's colourful, it's fun, it's quirky, it's kind of funny and silly, and you know, you can't not be happy in there, really. And you know, I have designed it so that it's sort of bright and shiny with glass, and then it's got coziness of the flock. So there's like a whole lot of bright coloured, for those that haven't seen it, bright coloured glass panels that I've designed in various shapes and sizes and colours. And yeah, it's just a kind of glass wallpaper, I guess, of bright colours. And it's kind of quirky, and different people see different things in it. And I think that some of them are jelly moulds. Some people think they're, you know, speakers. Other people think they're inverted nipples. I don't know, whatever you want to see in there. But it's just good that everyone finds something new and exciting each time they go in there.
Yeah, and so the walls are completely covered with these domes, nipples, jelly molds, whatever you want to see them as, and they're all in different colours. They're all textured, so it's really like being enveloped in something. I think, it's a little bit Ziggy Stardust, a little bit Fever Dream, I think is what I wrote when I wrote it up a couple of weeks ago. It's it's just very. It's just very striking. And I just think if you walk in there in whatever kind of mood, you're going to at least, you know, take a few beats to just gather yourself and just, you know, reapproach the space. It's great. And I feel like, as you say, you know, the last couple of years have been so monotonous for a lot of people to come into a place that's so busy and in your face. I think it's very refreshing.
Yeah, and I also find that when you like the places I design, because they are so unique and so, I guess they're kind of crazy in their colours. Like they sort of last the test of time because they're unique and they don't date. And sitting in one of the bars now at the Carlton 12 years ago, and I still get inquiries from designers and architects, you know, can they buy the wallpaper from me? Can they, you know, and I still find that people still 12 years later find it, you know, interesting and fresh, and it doesn't sort of date. So I hope that's kind of what happened to it. Sort of like a timeless piece, because you don't really know where you are because it's kind of crazy and bright.
I know that you've also been involved in like juice and a bit of wellness here and there, and you've experimented with that in the pub setting. Can you talk about, you know, the intersection of this, pubs and health? We perhaps don't necessarily put in the same sentence very often, but how have you tried to combine them?
Well, I mean, me personally, I've always had a passion for health and well-being and wellness from, you know, my early days in my 20s. And, you know, my parents were, you know, quite healthy, and we had, you know, to go to Chinese doctors as kids, which was kind of weird back in the 80s. And I kind of realised that if I wanted to play the long game in hospital, you know, I needed to sort of party and then detox and party and detox, and couldn't always, you know, be on the, it's a slippery slope, hospitality, if you're going to be in it for this long, if you don't have some sort of balance. In my early 20s, I used to party a lot and then take myself off to health retreats in Thailand and, you know, go on fast for 7 or 20 days and, you know, detox the last 6 months of partying and then, you know, go back and retox. So that's kind of how I got into it. And then I was more thinking about how to incorporate it into, you know, more of a lifestyle that wasn't such a pendulum shift where, you know, you go out, you get trashed, you ruin yourself, and then you, you know, detox. But also in part of that journey was that one time I went to Thailand and I came back and I just didn't drink, and sort of a month went by, and then my operations manager went to Thailand and did the same detox, and he thought he'd outdo me, and he didn't drink for 3 months. And then so we sort of started this battle of who could not drink, you know, for long periods of time. And I found that a lot of my friends would want to stop drinking or not drink as much, and that was their excuse why they couldn't go out. I can't go out because I'm not drinking. So I wanted to address that issue with a broader range of people, because I was out all night, you know, high on San Pellegrino bubbles or Cappy bubbles. So I wanted to make some drinks that people could go out and feel like they were having, you know, an alternative to a non-alcoholic drink. And this is like years ago. This is before, you know, it's a good 10, 15 years ago. And that also kind of gave you a herbal high. So I've been working on that. I've always wanted to do cold pressed juices, because that's what I was most passionate about. Because for me, working in hospitality, it was a way to get a whole lot of green nutrients and goodness straight into you. And at the bottom of the Carlton, I always wanted to set up like an organic health store. So we sort of did that for a while. I had a cold pressed juice brand. It was all organic. It was all plant-based. And the idea was, you know, you go upstairs, you get trashed, and at the end of the night, come down and get a green juice and some hangover cures and, you know, off you go. Retox, detox. And then so the Gertrude, there was one of those cafes at the back of the Gertrude. So we had one in the bottom of the Carlton and the Gertrude, and I had another property in Fitzroy that I was going to make a fine dining plant-based restaurant. And then the Gertrude came along, so I thought I'd have like the daytime cafe, the pub version, and then the fine dining, and that would be the three pillars. But trying to make health accessible and, you know, eating vegetables fun, and I do a lot of stuff with adaptogens, so like food as medicine, and trying to showcase vegetables and hero them rather than, you know, making them, you know, mock meats and soy vegetarian stuff and that sort of thing. So yeah, that was the plan. And we actually turned the Carlton Club into a plant-based diner for a while. And then that didn't go so well. People wanted steak and meat. So then we turned it back to normal. And it sort of pursued the health thing for quite a while. But then I realized people, this is pre-pandemic, people didn't really care about health. They just wanted to party. Or maybe people didn't realize, you know, expect that kind of level of health from me.
Yeah, it's really interesting. It's so interesting to hear you talk about the balance, you know, that you, different ways of trying to achieve balance, like whether it's, you know, 1 month on, 1 month off, or whether it's, you know, threading it through your life in a different way. I'd love you to, I mean, the menu at the Gertrude, it's not plant-based, but there's a lot of vegan stuff there, and, you know, vegetables are definitely heroed. And, yeah, your chef, Sheridan Sharp's doing a really great job with that menu there. But I'd love you to talk about, you know, these adaptogenic cocktails and your plans for those behind the bar.
So when I was doing the superfluid thing, of course, I had a passion for adaptogens, and I wanted to incorporate them into the juice. And we used to make food with adaptogens. So an adaptogen is like it's basically a herb. It can be from Chinese medicine. It can be from traditional medicine. It can be from naturopathy. But basically it's a herb that has multiple functions. So unlike an anti-inflammatory pill that's only going to address the anti-inflammatory, these particular herbs, the adaptogens, have multiple purposes, and they go in and adapt to what you need. So if you're more stressed, or you need more energy, or you need a, you know, boost of serotonin, they'll go in and adapt to what you need. So I have always used them for like 15, 20 years, and I wanted to incorporate them into superfluid, and we used to incorporate them into the food and, you know, make coffees with for immunity or to mood, but like happy highs, ones that give you energy. There was a libido one, those kind of things. And so I have been working on, I actually did them years ago, this range of non-alcoholic, but they're adult alcohol, you know, they're the good substitute to an alcoholic drink without being San Pellegrino or soda water with lemon. And basically they're little herbal highs, so they give you a little buzz. I've worked out a way that you can they're bioavailable to your body, and I can get the herbs into your system quickly, so you get a little buzz in like 20 minutes, and I guess they sort of last for about 40 minutes. You kind of feel a little mood boost, and I basically have done, I think it's 4 or 5 different ones at the moment based on the reasons like why people would drink. So they have adaptogens and they have flower essences in them, and they work on vibrational medicine, and some of them actually have some crystal stuff in there and some other frequency stuff. But they're basically like, why are people going out to drink? Like, what do they want from the alcohol? They want to relax. They want connection with people. They want to be uninhibited so that they can dance, or, you know, ask the person across the bar for their phone number, or, you know, get the guts to break up with someone, or they want to feel connected. So they're sort of what I've worked on, the herbs, the actual physical herbs, and then put the vibrational essences of the flowers in them that give you those kind of properties as well. So, yeah, it's quite involved. But, yeah, they taste good, and everyone loves them. And Sarah and I were actually testing them a lot again in lockdown, and, you know, we'd go off and do something and we'd come back and go, oh, my God, we feel like we're drunk, but we weren't, you know. We were just high on happiness or something.
Wow. I love this, yeah, magic potion side of it. And, I mean, it's interesting because you've been doing non-alcoholic drinks forever, and it's sort of like the non-alcoholic beverage space has gone gangbusters. But, you know, I think this side of it where it's people have gone, you know, that try to replicate or mimic or, you know, be in the same ballpark as in terms of taste and in terms of packaging, and, you know, that you're happy to order it around with your friends and, you know, you're getting the non-alcoholic but you don't feel like a pariah. But I don't think this, the reasons for drinking that you've identified and that you that issue that you're trying to solve, I think that's, yeah, it's still really groundbreaking.
Yeah, I mean, it's something I've been wanting to do, and actually I got offered by a big company to produce them years ago, but I had other projects in the works. But yeah, it's interesting now how the non-alcoholic space has really taken off, and everyone always says I'm always seven years ahead of the curve. So I guess it's time now to kind of pull them out and, yeah, get them into action. Now I finished the pub, you know. Just had to tick one thing off my, you know, to-do list.
Pubs are such special places, Tracy, and, you know, I think Melbourne's a city that really loves its pubs. Australia as a country loves its pubs as well. Have you noticed a particular joy when people, you know, after various lockdowns have been able to gather again in that pub space?
Yeah, I think the pub has been the real hero throughout all the lockdowns and leading into the lockdowns and coming out particularly. You know, I could speak from experience from the Windsor Castle, you know, going way back to 2020, you know, March, when no one knew what was really going on, and like people would come to that space because it was safe and it was local and community, and, you know, they didn't think that they could get the virus if they were in, you know, the little back streets of their local pub. And then I feel like coming out of lockdown, those sort of local pub environments were sort of safe spaces more so, and casual safe spaces as well, so that everyone could, you know, address their own, you know, whatever they had going on in terms of coming back to socialising, more so than like going to a, you know, high-end restaurant. I think the pubs have been the real heroes, and yeah, they've sort of been a real regeneration in the local community pub, I think.
Yeah, I mean, exactly, as you say, such a community space, and also, you know, usually a bit of indoor and a bit of outdoor, so people have felt safe in those zones as well. But my first meal after our big sixth lockdown was in a pub, and it's just what I wanted. I just needed that beer on tap, and just that I guess that welcome and that flexibility where you felt like you could, yeah, you weren't bolted to a seat, you could move around, and yeah, it was just something so special about being able to reclaim those spaces.
Yeah, and I think it's like there's some sort of kind of, we have, as Australians, we have that weird kind of obsession with the, you know, the local pub and the Palmer and the pot. And, you know, I remember like in one of those lockdowns we thought we were going to be open and then we got caught short and we had a whole lot of beer to get rid of at the Windsor Castle. So I remember myself like, you know, working there and being able to have a beer on tap and being like, oh my God, can't believe I'm having a beer on tap. Can't believe I'm so excited about a pub, you know, just a pot beer and can't believe I'm so excited about a pub meal. And yeah, my first meal out of lockdown was in a pub and it was like the most exciting thing ever, which is crazy.
I get that though. Like I, you know, took a photo of my pot of beer and it was just like the beading on the glass was the most beautiful thing I'd ever seen.
It's so weird. So, so weird when you, yeah, now you're like, oh, we were a bit crazy back then, weren't we?
But I think if it's about, if the result is that we appreciate all those things more and, you know, in an ongoing way and value them, then I think, you know, it's, that's for the best. Definitely a silver lining. Yeah, Tracy, I've loved talking to you. It's been so great to hear the story behind some of these venues and, you know, all the thought and love and passion, and obsession, if I'm allowed to say that, that you put into these businesses. Yeah, thanks for bringing what you do to Melbourne. It's, the city's definitely richer for what you've done over the decades, and I look forward to having many more meals, pots of beer, and magic potions in your venues. Thank you so much for chatting to us.
Thanks a lot, Danny. Thank you for having me. It's been great chatting to you too.
This is Dirty Linen, and I'm Danny Vallant. We air the issues that the hospitality industry finds hard to talk about, hearing from different people with unique perspectives. We want to hear from you as well. If you have something that needs to be said about a topic, get in touch so we can include your perspective. Contact us at dirtylinen@deepintheweeds.com.au or hit us up on Insta @dirtylinenpodcast. We can't wait to hear from you. This.